You're listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast series. From the Vault, classic content from the Ayn Rand Institute.
The Virtue of Selfishness? Ayn Rand's Ethics of Egoism in Your Own Life by Alain Journeau.
I want to tell you about Joe, and I'm sure none of you have met him because that's not his real name. Joe is a good guy. If you met him, you'd want to be his friend. He's pretty selective, so he might not make you his Facebook friend, but that's a good thing, right? He's not promiscuous on Facebook. Now, Joe has a lot of things going for him. He's finishing college soon. He's almost done with his major credits. He has a good group of friends. He's, you know, pretty level-headed. He's got a funny sense of humor. He's not a slacker, and he's not, he's past that phase where he gets drunk every Friday night. He's level-headed. He knows what he wants. Now, Joe has basically on paper everything going for him. But Joe can't sleep. Now, for a 20-year-old, that's unusual. Insomnia at 20, not that common. Now, what's eating him up? What's keeping him up at night? Well, it's not his girlfriend. That relationship's fine. It's not his friends. It's not even his schoolwork. I mean, he's doing pretty well. He's got B+, A averages on a lot of courses, and he's not doing those soft subjects, right? He's not just coasting in, you know, I don't want to criticize any particular subject, but you know what I'm talking about. There are the easy A classes. That's not what he's doing. He's taking his college time seriously. And he's sampled across all the things that kind of intrigued him. So what's eating him up? All right, so you need to know a little about Joe's family. All right, so let me tell you about Joe's family. He's the eldest son of four, and there are high expectations of Joe. He knows what he wants to do, but he knows that the people back home, his mom and dad, have a very different picture of what that looks like. And it's one of those things where it's accumulating. It started off as kind of just this sense that there's a conflict brewing as soon as he made a decision. Because he knew that the decision he wanted to pursue about his own life is completely at odds with what his parents want him to do. Because ever since he was a kid, there's been one path for Joe. It's been as direct and as certain as being on railroad tracks. It's heading in one direction. There's no question about it. Except it's not really what he wants to do. It's not what he wants to do, and he knows his parents are not going to like what he has to say. And when I say they're not going to like it, Joe knows his parents pretty well, and he's had enough conflicts with them to start the anxiety even before he's reached the house. Right? Even before he's scheduled the visit, he knows what's coming. It's sort of this cloud hanging over him. And that's a big part of why he's not sleeping at night. It's eating him up at night. I don't know if you've ever had this experience of a confrontation you know is coming, it's ahead of you, and it's building, and you start thinking about it. I'm gonna say this, they're gonna say that, and then you start churning and churning. That's what Joe's doing. He's living the conflict before it's even happened. Now, what is all this about? What is going on here? So Joe is a bio major, and he's a bio major because he's supposed to be a doctor. Right? That makes sense. Now, he's done with all his bio credits, and he's also done with the idea of being a doctor. It's clear to him. It's crystal clear. It's almost like, you know, if someone says to you, are you hungry? And you say, no, I'm not hungry. That's pretty clear. There's no ambiguity about that. You just ate. It's clear. For Joe, it's a simple question. Do I want to be a doctor? No, I don't want to be a doctor. I mean, it's nothing to do with me. It's somebody else's career. And for his parents, what is it like? Well, his parents are convinced that this is the path for Joe. So this is one of those conversations you have to have in person. You can't just call them up and say, hey, mom, you know, you know how you sent me to science camp, and you know how you made me intern at the hospital, and you know how you got me that great job working for Dr. Joe, not Dr. Joe, for Dr. Abelowitz. You know, it was a great opportunity, and I know you had to pull some strings for me that summer. I learned a lot, but you know where this is heading, right? As soon as he starts on that track. So you can't just do that by text. You obviously can't do it by email. It's not a phone call conversation. He shows up at home, standard visit. After dinner, they kind of settle back, and he says, well, he starts broaching it. He's run through this a few times, so he's not quite sure which is the right approach. He just blurts it out. I need to tell you something. It's been eating me up. So here's what's happening. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to med school. All those applications you helped me fill out, all the money we put into I'm pretty sure that's not where I'm going. And I thought I needed to tell you now. And before he's finished laying out he hasn't even got out why, right? He's just, this is not happening. Exactly what he predicted would happen? No, worse than that. So his mother is gushing with tears. I don't know if you have relatives like this, but I could sympathize with Joe because this is exactly my grandmother. As soon as you give her bad news, the waterworks are just shooting out. She is weeping solid for an hour before she can catch her breath. Now, his father is not the emotional type. His father just becomes stony-faced. I can't do a stony face, but but he you can tell that behind the stony face, there's years of thought that are now coming down, crashing down. Joe, our son, the doctor, no, I won't be able to say that anymore. That's what his father's thinking. So it doesn't go anywhere that night. Joe goes back to campus. His mother pesters him with, come on, Joe, this is silly. You'll agree, this is silly. His dad just won't talk to him. He's giving him the silent treatment, which is his dad's thing. It's not unusual. This is it. This is what his dad does to cope when he can't handle it. And his parents, after I think it was 3 days go by, his parents say, look, Joe, it didn't go well last time you were out here. We know this is important to you. Let's talk about it. We need to talk about it as adults. And we expect you to come back home and hash it out with us. Because clearly we're at loggerheads, but we can sort this out, right? We're a strong family. Let's talk. Now, Joe knows what let's talk means. This is where his parents get their way. I mean, this is the way it's been throughout his life. So he procrastinates. And eventually his parents prevail and he shows back up. He shows at home. Now, he's done his homework this time. He knows what he's going to do. He's going to walk through the logic of what he wants to do. And he's got an unanswerable argument for his parents. And he knows he needs an argument because his dad is a lawyer, right? No offense to lawyers. I love lawyers and my best friends are lawyers, but they're damn good at arguments. They can pick it apart like nobody's business. So he's done, you know, he had some debate practice in high school. So he's ready. And here's what he's going to do. Here's basically what he says to his parents. Look, I was interested in biology, and I did the whole thing, right? I tried it. I went through everything, and I finished all the credits. I know what it's like. And I did all those internships. I did an internship. I did EMT training. I rode in the ambulances. I know what it's like, okay? And here's my experience. This is what I go through. I can't get through the three-hour labs in college without two Red Bulls, right? I can't do it. I need to will myself step by step like this. I have to really consciously make myself do the homework, show up in class and pay attention. I just don't like it. It sucks. It's a misery. And all I can tell you is, if you want me to spend the next 10 years of my life training further down this path, what you're saying to me is you are condemning me to misery. Because that's exactly what it is. If you ask me, do I want to spend the next 10 years training up to my elbows in blood and guts and sick people and sniveling? That's not my future. I can't handle it, and it's not what I want. And I don't care if you're going to pay for it. So let's put that argument off the table, right? Because that is a strong argument, right? Like, we'll pay for it. This is not what I want to do. And before, and he's preempting his parents, right? He knows his parents are going to come back with something. So he says, well, no, before you tell me I'm throwing my life away, that's not true. I'm not a slacker, right? I did well in school, and I know what I want to do. It's not like I'm just turning my back on something and saying, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to kind of hang out at the beach, figure out my future, go backpacking in Europe, and, like, you know, find my bliss someplace. And, you know, there are people who do that, and sometimes it works out. And Joe's not like that. He's, you know me, Mom and Dad. I'm serious. I'm going to figure this out, and I actually do know what I want to do, and I'm passionate about it. And I'm so passionate about it, I see limitless opportunity in this path. And what I want to be a photographer. It's totally respectable. Lots of places you could do this job. Totally portable. You could do it anywhere. That's it. That's my passion. And if you're against that, you're against me. You're against my happiness. Right? So that's his case. And he goes home. And he presents his case. Now, he wasn't quite this animated. He was trying to make a reasoned point, and he did it. He got it all out. How well do you think it went over? Yeah, it didn't go over very well. His parents were beyond the point where they were just using their emotion to guilt him. That was over. They'd gotten past the shock. Now it was just a fight, a real fight over the future of Joe. And here's what they said back. None of this Joe had an answer for, right? But this is what he left with. We have taught you to love us. We have taught you to honor us. We have taught you to obey us. We are your parents. We brought you into this world, and we expect to have a decent hearing. We expect you to respect our view. And more than that, we have a view of what your future is. We know this is going to be good for you. This is a respectable career. It is a profitable career. I mean, do you know what doctors make? I mean, seriously, do you know what doctors make in this market? You slog it out for 6, 7, maybe, all right, maybe it's 12 years. But at the end of it, man, you can rake it in if that's what you want. But more than that, you're a healer. You bring people to life. Come on, Joe. That's momentous. How many people can say that that's what they do? How many people can say that they have a job where they bring people to life? Now, we're not here to stop you from being happy. We're your parents. Come on, get over that, right? But think about our dreams for your future. We've been talking about this, Joe, since you got into grade 8, since we coached you in science, since we helped you with science camp, since we got you all these internships, right? This is what we've been talking about. And more than that, Joe, how old are you now, Joe? You're barely 20, right? You're just becoming an adult. We know what's best for you. We're looking at the future. We're looking at the long-range vision here, Joe. Not some momentary fancy and passion. We're really thinking about what's good for you down the road. Medical school takes time, yes, but it's worth it in the end. Come on, right? No pain, no gain. Come on. Go. How well do you think that's going to energize Joe? Yeah, so they're still at loggerheads. None of that worked on Joe because Joe has a very definite view of what he thinks is going to make him happy. There are a lot of angry voices, and I'm not going to reproduce those to you. Okay, so there's a total logjam here. And Joe's mom has what she thinks might be a trump card here. So she calls up Father O'Connell. Joe hasn't talked to Father O'Connor since he was expelled from Sunday school, but still, he's their minister. And she says to him, I need your help. Here's the situation. So he emails Joe, and Joe just barely gets the email because he thinks it's spam. He doesn't even remember the name. So he reads it. And what does it tell him? I mean, it's all the same BS his parents have been laying down. Joe, Do you remember those lessons in Sunday school about being a good son, about putting family first? Doesn't that resonate with you? I remember you when you were in my class. I know you can do the right thing here, Joe. Honor your parents. Now, I know you're interested in photography, but you have to think about their interests too. I mean, they're really in it for you. Are you really going to put this momentary fancy ahead of your future and of your parents' ideals for you? There's two more paragraphs. I'm not going to relate those because Joe deletes the email. And he says something pretty mean about Father O'Connell, but you don't need to hear that. You get the gist. Okay, this is the final thing his parents try. Joe's dad, who's not particularly talkative or emotional, has reached a breaking point. And he shows up on campus and he invites Joe to go to get coffee. So they sit at Starbucks. And here's what Joe's dad says to him. Now, you know, they've had a lot of anguish here. So he tries to relate to him man to man, which is a new experience for Joe because he's used to being condescended to by his parents. So his father brings out what is, in his view, the ultimate trump card. We're not here to stand between you and your happiness. Let's make that clear, okay? But here's what I observe, Joe, and here's the pattern I observe, and I want you to listen, because I think there's something here. So, yes, I get it, you love photography. I get it, you spend some time at the school paper, you've got experience, you've got the equipment, you think you're ready, you think this is your passion, this is what's going to make you happy in life. But let me remind you that this, to me, is just another of your whimsical phases, right? I mean, wasn't it just a few months after you got interested in World of Warcraft that you declared at age 17 that you wanted to be a video game designer? How long did that last? That was your passion, right? It lasted all of about 2 weeks, and then it went away. And then there was script writing, right? You saw this great movie, you saw the DVD extra of how they wrote the story, and you thought, that's me, I'm going to do that. I can write stories, I love stories, this is all I want. And you read that book, it's a really great book, story, you went to the guy's seminar, you figured out, what happened to the story, the script writing? I haven't heard about that for a long time. Went up in smoke. Let's not even get into that summer you tried to become a programmer, right? You saw that special on 2020, or was it 60 Minutes, about how they have it so good at Google. I don't know if you've seen this thing, right? But it's awesome. They show up at Google, someone does their laundry, they get 1/5 of their time to do all kinds of exciting, innovative projects. I mean, it sounds like the best thing you could have. So you did that online course in programming, and where did that go? Joe, you're jumping in at the deep end. You're following a momentary passion. There's nothing here. You're not thinking about the future. You're just, all I'm seeing is the same kid just flitting from one thing to the next. We were looking out for you then when we told you to go and become a doctor. And we're looking out for you now when we're telling you to stay on that track. All right, Joe wants to be a doctor. He doesn't want to be a doctor, he wants to be a photographer. And his parents tell him, not quite you're crazy, but you're being immature, you don't know what you want, we know what's best for you. Listen to us, honor us, obey us. Don't follow this idea of yours, this is silliness. Okay, so the reason I know about Joe is because this is the sort of thing he wanted help with, right? So I want to ask you guys, by a show of hands, right? I'm going to ask you a few questions about what you would tell Joe. Now, so the first question for you. You don't have to agree with what they're saying, but here's the question for you. Do you think his parents deserve at least a hearing? By a show of hands. Okay. Yeah. All right, let me make the claim stronger, right? if you think Joe should listen to his parents, obey them, honor them, follow in that path, and put aside this whole photography business, raise your hand. Okay, one person raises his hand with a qualification, let it be noted. All right, how many people here will turn to Joe and say, Joe, follow your bliss, man, do it. Okay, good. So there was one person who said, follow your parents, and many, many more who said, follow your bliss, Joe. Okay, those of you who didn't raise your hands, we'll come back to you. You have to take a stand, people. But we'll come back to you momentarily. So, now, you all came to this talk, and you know the title, I hope, which is about Ayn Rand's book, The Virtue of Selfishness. And that, I hope, is a very big clue to the answer of the next question, which is, hands up if you think Ayn Rand would side with Joe's parents. One person. Okay, we'll come back to you. All right. Hands up if you think she would say, Joe, go for it. All right. About as many people as said they would support Joe. Okay. Now, I'm curious, just one of the questions, this is parenthetical. How many people have read something by Ayn Rand? Yeah, most people. Great. Great. Now, here's what I think Ayn Rand would say. Now, I don't speak for her. She's not here. I don't think she ever would have had the opportunity to meet Joe, but here's what I think she would say. Yes, completely nothing to do with Joe's parents. Joe's parents are, they're wrong. Okay? But you'd also say, Joe, you're not right either. You're both wrong. So the question is, why? Okay, so The Virtue of Selfishness, that's the title of the book. Do we have a copy here? Great. If you haven't read it, when you leave tonight, buy a copy, read it. Really insightful. Groundbreaking. Now, just from the title, you should get, she probably is not going to go for all this duty, guilt stuff that his parents are laying thick, right? And you're probably going to get that, well, she's not going to go with what Father O'Connell says either, right? But why? I mean, let's just lay out a little bit. Why would she say that's wrong? So I'm going to spend just a minute or two on this and then get to the what I think is more interesting question, which is, why does she think Joe's not quite right? Okay, so why does she think Joe's parents are wrong? Well, part of her view is that it's your life. I mean, that's central to it. You own it. You have to make these decisions. And more than that, your own happiness is a moral value. You should pursue it. And more, what's one of the features that makes her view so revolutionary is she says that in life, there should be no sacrifices. It's not that you have to decide between I have to give up for my parents versus they have to give up for me. No, there shouldn't be that kind of conflict. Nobody should have to sacrifice to anybody. No one should be a collector of sacrifices nor a giver of them. And in fact, that whole conception that life requires the sacrifice of value to somebody is wrong. It's incoherent. It's contradictory. It means that some people get to collect and other people have to give. Why is that? Where did that come from? It's flatly inconsistent. And in doing this, let's not underestimate what's happening here. She's pushing back against a tradition in morality that goes back at least 2,000 years. She's saying, no, we don't want Jesus to die for us. We don't want there to be a sacrifice. The vision for you is to achieve your own happiness in life. Not to suffer and not to feel guilty, just to really make your own way in the world. So let me ask you then, we'll come back to the person who raised his hand about why he would listen to Joe's parents, because there's there's something interesting about that. But let's go to why Joe is not in the right. What is the critique of Joe here? On the face of it, Joe would appear to be doing what Ayn Rand says, well, go after your passions. Well, slow down a minute. Slow down. What is Joe doing? Well, I think the critique she would offer of Joe is, Joe, it's great that you love this, and you should be passionate about what you do in life. You should love every minute of the thing that you do for your career. It's a remarkably important thing in your life. And because it's so important, you have to take it seriously. And Joe, I think the message would be, I don't think you're being selfish enough. I don't think you're being serious enough about what achieving your happiness really entails. So on her view, there's a big difference between, put it this way, if you want to achieve your happiness, you need to think about how to do that. And the question about Joe is, has he done anything close to what it looks like to think about a career? I think the answer here is no. So let me say a few things about what it means to be selfish. Well, I've indicated a little bit that it means you have to earn the things that you want out of life. That doesn't mean you go around trampling over people, stabbing them in the back, stealing from them when you... That's not selfishness. That's a caricature. That is a caricature. The idea, and you'll hear this a lot, and this is one reason Ayn Rand titled her book, and titled her view, Selfishness. Because she's pushing back against that misconception. She's saying, you want me to... In the culture, the common view is that whoever's pursuing things for their own end is selfish. And that's just not true. Because that means you're putting a crook and someone who's achieving things in their own life through their own in the same category. And that doesn't work. You can't put Al Capone, Bernie Madoff, Andrew Carnegie, and James J. Hill in the same category. You can't do that. These guys are crooks. They kill people, they cheat people, they lie, and they steal. That has nothing to do with being selfish. That is a sure path to subverting your own happiness in life. Achieving things by your own effort and through your own thought, that is the path to success. Now, there's a lot to say about how to go about and judge what you need to do in life. But there's one key thing that I want to highlight, and it relates to what Joe isn't doing. You need to be critical about the difference between what your emotions drive you to do and what you judge to be the right course of action. Now, I'm not saying that your emotions and your judgment are at odds. They can be, but they needn't be. What I'm saying is that you need to understand why you value something and to judge whether it's something you want to pursue. You need a standard. You need something objective. You need to look at the world. You need facts to reach your conclusions about what is in your interest. I'm going to get this wrong, because I'm not very good at lyrics, but I'm sure you've all heard the song that has the lyric, if it makes you happy, can't be that bad. Does that ring a bell for you? Yeah. I don't think that's true. Because that's not quite right, and obviously we're not going to take wisdom from songs, but the issue is here, just because something makes you feel good, doesn't mean it's good for you. I'm sure you can think of many examples. I mean, you know, my kids, they're not old enough to make these kinds of decisions, but if they were left to their own devices, they would eat chocolate all day, they would drink juice for every meal, and they would just sit there and watch TV all the time, because that makes them feel good, that's fun. But that's not good for them. I mean, yes, chocolate is good, and juice is good, and TV is fun sometimes, but you can't live like that. That's going to destroy their bodies and destroy their minds. And there are even more obvious cases. I mean, I'm sure you can think of lots of things in your own life that, yeah, this feels good, or the people you know, yeah, they take actions that are not going to be good for them long term. But that's the essential. What is in your interest long term as a human being? And what Ayn Rand's getting at is your life, there are facts about your life, there are facts about human life that are true in all places at all times. And these facts give rise to a standard in morality for how to judge the good and the evil, how to judge what's good for your life, what's good for you, and what isn't. And no one is in a position to form values that should guide you except you. It's your responsibility to judge. So the standard, to put it starkly, is, on her view, human life, what supports human life, what helps you flourish, what achieves your long-term realization as a person, right? That's an objective standard. You could look to facts and see their effects on your life. Now, in your own individual life, how do you use that to guide you towards your own happiness? Well, you need to use your mind. You need to look at the world, inspect what you find interesting, the values that you're drawn to, and judge them. How do they fit together? Where do they go? What are their implications? So let's bring this back to Joe to concretize it a little bit. I'm saying Joe's not being selfish enough. He's not being serious about making those kinds of judgments about his own values in life. So what would it look like? Well, let's start with this. Not every decision you make in life is as momentous as your career, right? What you have for dinner, it's important. You got to think about your health, your what you like to eat and so on. But it's not the sort of thing you spend months deciding, right? You'd die before you'd reach a conclusion. Other decisions are more important. There's a whole scale of how important it is, and that leads you to investing more time in it. Career. You spend a lot of your time on your career and your job and what you do with your time. So it's important. You should give it real thought. Now, has Joe done anything like that? Well, what would it look like just on this question? What would it really look like? What are some of the questions that Joe should ask and hasn't asked? Well, being a photographer is surely glamorous. There are lots of things about it that draw Joe. You know, he had a lot of fun at the school paper, but like any job, there are things that are not so glamorous. You have to stay out in the rain after hours waiting for the person you're taking a picture of to come out of the courthouse, and there you are with 16 other people getting jostled. Now, some people love that. They relish it. But if he's thinking about a career as a photographer doing news, does he really get that that's what's involved? Photography, there are no dock rooms anymore, right? A lot of the time is spent in front of a computer. And you have to accept that that's part of what it is. Now, how much does Joe like spending his time in front of a computer? Well, in fact, what Joe likes is going around taking pictures of plants and animals, and he likes taking nature photos. What he can't stand is all this faffing around on his computer to get an image up to Facebook. It drives him nuts. I mean, it's not that complicated, but it just is no patience for this kind of stuff. Now, if you told him, Joe, you know, once you're done taking the pictures, you have to select them. Yeah, I can do that. But then you have to spend time cleaning them up, and then you have to process them, and then you have to decide what to do with them and how to lay them. He's already tuned you out. You're starting to sound like you're speaking in Klingon at this point. Okay, well, so maybe he doesn't like that part of his job. Now, what does it look like to make this a career, Joe? Okay, that means it's a long-term kind of investment. And what kind of money are you going to make? Now, I'm not saying this is the only consideration, but it's important, right? If you can't make a living doing it, you have to think twice about, well, can I support myself doing this, or is this my hobby? Well, it turns out it's very hard to make a living as a photographer. Okay, well, Joe finds out he can make about $25,000 starting out, at best, as an assistant. That doesn't pay off his student debts, but he's willing to do that. He has to know what this looks like before making a kind of decision. Now, it could be that he's decided this is so important to me, I'm willing to live with this kind of pay scale between 25 and 60. That's the most he can hope to earn over the next 10 years. He has to know something about that before he can say, I'm all in. He doesn't. He hasn't the faintest idea of what you could earn. Joe wants to be on the cover of National Geographic. Wouldn't everybody? Now, here's a question for you. How many people have seen the cover of National Geographic lately? I mean, this is the pinnacle of what you could do if you like nature photography. This is like the big leagues. This is, in fact, if you were a basketball player shooting hoops, or if you were in a varsity team or something like that, this would be like getting into the NBA. How many people get into the NBA? Of all the people who play basketball and compete in high school and college, thousands upon thousands, how many play in the NBA? Okay. How many people do you think are photographers who are so good they get on the cover of National Geographic? It's a vanishingly small number. It's similar to how many people are the CEO of a Fortune 500 company? Trick question, right? It's got to be somewhere around 500, right? Except for a few companies that have two CEOs. But basically, of all the people who work in business, there are hundreds and hundreds. A lot of VPs and directors and managers and CEOs and all those people would love to be a CEO. How many of them ever get to that? And the top 500 company, that's a pretty big pool. That is the sort of thing that you have to be aware of. Now, I'm not telling you that Joe shouldn't aim high. Nothing like that. In fact, I would tell him, Joe, if this is what you want to do, if you want to be on the cover of National Geographic, you should go for it. But you should know what the odds are and what the work entails. This means putting in 110% at every step of the way. Michael Jordan got to where he was in the NBA because he gave it everything and then some. Joe, you need to know that. You can't just flit around and say, oh yeah, in 2 years' time, I'll be on the cover of National Geographic, my career will skyrocket, people will be coming to me to take their pictures and drop in hundreds of thousands of dollars at every photo shoot. Joe, get a grip, right? If this is what you want, you have to know what it looks like. Concretely, factually, right? You have to know that your passion and reality, how do they fit? And it's not to tell you to dump your passion. On the contrary, the more that this matters to you, the more you should be oriented to the facts and know what they look like. So that's just a flavor of what it looks like to think about this career goal. Now let me say one more thing. The point is not that Joe needs to be omniscient, know every little detail about this. That's just not realistic. That's never true in life. Nor is it that he has to have 0% uncertainty, right? That's not true either. Uncertainty is inherent in every choice you make. The point is that you have to know, you have to have a view of what your goal looks like, what it takes to achieve it, if you believe this is what's going to make you happy. Now, Joe hasn't given it nearly that kind of consideration. But if it matters to you, if this is the path you think will give you the life rich with happiness that you want, you need to give it that kind of thought. I hope that doesn't sound intimidating. But it's not meant to be. It's meant to highlight something that is, I think, rare in life, and certainly it's distinctive to Ayn Rand, which is the things that give our life meaning and the passions that we want and are moved to pursue, the things that are the source of what make our life so wonderful, are things that we have to earn. You have to put in the work. And in Ayn Rand's view, go for it. This is your life. It's precious. You get one shot at life. And precisely because it's so important, you cannot surrender or you cannot abdicate the responsibility of figuring out how to earn your happiness, how to achieve it. In her view, to be selfish, to find the goals that are pro your life, the people that are going to make your life richer, the hobbies, the career, the vacations, the books you're interested in, the movies you like, all the things that we love and we cherish and we want to relish every minute of, those things are things you have to choose. And in order to choose, you have to think. You have to figure out where your values are, what are they, and then figure out how to get them. And the key, and in her view, the virtue of selfishness is, it comes down to this. The primary, the most important virtue here is rationality, is the use of your mind to understand yourself, to understand what you want, to judge what's valuable according to an objective standard, which is your life, long range as a human being, and then to figure out how to go get it. And then go and get it. And enjoy it and live every minute and relish it because it's yours. So ultimately, I slightly overstated the critique of Joe because his heart's in the right place, right? I mean, he hasn't done his homework yet, and we can give him some slack because he's young. But his heart's in the right place. He wants to find something in life that he's passionate about. And what he doesn't want is a goal, a career goal, an widely embracing goal that someone else has put into his lap and told him, this is what you should do. He's right to chafe at that. But what he needs to do is figure out his own path. And no one can substitute for his judgment. He needs to make that decision. And that might mean he's wrong sometimes, maybe a lot, maybe completely wrong. But he needs to figure that out, and he has to take that responsibility in his life. So, Joe, be more serious about what your self-interest really looks like. Because ultimately, the way he came across was this. What I want is photography. And because I want it, it's good. That's inadequate. That's not enough, Joe. Figure out what you want and go get it. So, Joe has a bright future ahead of him, I think. I hope, if he takes some good advice. So I want to pause here and tell you what happens to Joe. What do you think happens to Joe? Hands flying up. Okay. Well, I'm going to just tell you. I don't want to make too much of it. There's been a lot of mystery and fake mystery and some tricks along the way in my story, but I'll tell you. Joe figured it out. Joe found the career he wanted, and he's a happy person. Every day. And every day he has to think about what next. What are the goals he wants to build on? Do you need me to tell you whether it was photography or not? Because it doesn't really matter in this story. In this story, what matters is that Joe is the one who is in the driver's seat, and he is thinking. He's living a life of rational egoism. And that is why he's achieved his happiness. I'll pause here and take some questions. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. You can also find us on YouTube. If you like this content, please share or leave us a review. For more information, go to aynrand.org.